May it please the court, Peter Ladig on behalf of the appellant, Lisa S.A. I rise to introduce my co-counsel, Mark Simrout of Baker & Hostetler. He's been admitted pro hac vice and will be making the argument on behalf of the appellant today.
Thank you. Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Dent, do you have something to say?
I was going to make
my
introduction, but I can wait until
you
make
it.
Good morning. I would like to introduce Ed Davis, Ed Mullins, and Annette Escobar, who are lawyers with the Miami firm of Astigaraga Davis, who have assisted me in the case in the trial court and in this case.
Welcome to the court. Excuse me. I'm going to. You can see you have 20 minutes on the clock. When I start the clock, it'll count down. And when the light switches from green to yellow, you'll be in the time you reserved. You can continue, but you will be using your reserve time.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, there are two issues today. One is the forum non-convenience, which was the only grounds for dismissing two Delaware companies, one a holding company and the other the franchisor, of 324 franchises in 13 countries and 15 U.S. states. So this is quite a large operation. The other grounds is personal jurisdiction over the holding companies of that are abroad in Barbados and Panama, and one individual is the president of these companies. Now, starting with forum nonconvenience, Vice Chancellor Lamb said there was overwhelming hardship in the Delaware companies litigating in Delaware, and all the companies litigating in Delaware. You, however, are dealing with a group of franchisors who propose to be the next Kentucky Fried Chicken around the world. They are doing business in 13 countries in the United States, in Central America, in Europe, in Asia, and they can do business all over the world, but they can't. It would be overwhelming hardship for them to litigate in this court. It just doesn't make sense to Lisa, at least. Why come to Delaware? Come to Delaware because you're dealing with a international conspiracy.
Just one factual point.
Yes.
That perhaps you can help us on. The other side's briefs make reference to a multitude of lawsuits that were filed by Lisa. Precisely how many and where?
Well, there were three in Florida. There's one that was filed in the Caribbean that was dismissed once they got an injunction in Florida. There was one in New York that was dismissed, and there was one here. The three in Florida were different in a number of respects. Number one, it was against Pollo Campero, the original company, and the production
company. So there
were
only five, because the other side talks about hundreds.
Of lawsuits?
Yes.
I'm not aware of hundreds of lawsuits. There's been a lot of litigation in Guatemala of corporate nature that they filed.
How much Guatemalan litigation was filed by Lisa?
I don't know the number, Judge, and none of it was filed in Guatemala City. There were some corporate actions filed in the provinces where they thought they could get a fair hearing, and it related
to
corporate.
You don't know how many?
I don't know the number.
And then there was the Bermuda action.
Then there was the Bermuda, the Bermuda action, which went to trial. I did the most important one from our point of view. Let me talk about the Florida ones, because they keep talking about forum shopping. A Florida case was filed against Pollo Campero and three or five production companies, which were Salvadoran companies. It was discovered almost on the eve of the statute of limitations that the sale of those companies had been brought about with fraudulent financial statements. And so that case was filed. They discovered a broader conspiracy for the companies that were not sold. And a second case was filed and put before the same judge. So you can't call that forum shopping. It was just they took some time. They learned very quickly right before the running of the 6-year statute of limitations that they had been defrauded on the sale. They filed that very quickly. They did additional investigation, discovered that the Avicola companies, the other companies that were not sold, they were also being defrauded on those. They filed a second lawsuit against different companies and different individuals in the same court in front of the same judge.
Does the record show how many and the nature of the litigations that were filed in Guatemala?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor.
It doesn't?
I don't believe it does, no.
Is that addressed in the Florida cases, which found Guatemala to be a more convenient forum?
How many Guatemalan cases? The fact that there were Guatemalan cases was discussed in this record and in that record. But the number of cases, I don't, if it's there, I don't recall it being there.
It's the kind of thing that sort of flies out at you.
Yes, it does. I understand.
I would have thought that that's something that your side would have been prepared to address. If it's hyperbolic, that's one thing. If it's factually true, then that's something else.
Well, it is factually true that there were corporate cases relating to corporate actions, not these fraud cases, but corporate actions filed outside of Guatemala City, where
the corporate actions meaning by Lisa.
By Lisa. Yes. So there are actions down there. That's true.
Are still pending?
Not that I'm aware of. There was one action that is relevant, that is new, that was just decided in January, where the other side tried to force the Florida case into Guatemala, and the Guatemalan court dismissed it, saying it didn't have competence to hear it. And so that case may be going back to Florida now, because the Guatemalan court has now decided that it doesn't have competence to hear the case, because it involved foreign companies.
What does that mean, competence? To hear the case.
Competence is, I think, what we would call subject matter jurisdiction. It says it involved a foreign company as a defendant, and they didn't have subject matter jurisdiction. In effect, they call it competence to hear the case. And so,
well, as I understand it, the Chancery decision that's the subject matter of this appeal,
yes,
wasn't decided until after the Florida actions were complete.
Yes, that they had been dismissed, yes.
And now, those are the same actions that were dismissed in Florida that the courts in Guatemala will not decide, so it may be going back to Florida?
It may be going back to Florida. That is the opinion of my Florida counsel.
I'm sure this is frustrating for your clients to try to find a court.
Yes.
But what are the implications if the Delaware action was stayed pending the resolution of Florida?
Yes.
Delaware thought the Florida action was over, but now the Florida action is going to be resurrected.
Yes.
Even if we ruled in your favor and this went back to the Court of Chancery, isn't it likely the Court of Chancery would say, well, now the Florida action is viable again, we'll wait again?
They may, but then we would still have an action here. I mean, the reason for coming here, the reason for going to Florida, the reason for going to Bermuda, was that's where the assets are. And what are you going to get? You're going to get a judgment in Guatemala in a court. If you read the State Department's website, in courts that are highly criticized, they'll come up here and they say they're not, well, that judgment's not enforceable up here because there's no due process, there's violence, there's corruption, there's all sorts of problems with Guatemalan courts. The argument will be going the other way. They'll be making the arguments that we're making. We went to Bermuda, we tried the case, proved it was a conspiracy because it was actually a company there and $3 million that they could get. They went to Florida because they had laundered $70 million to Florida. Came up here because you have a franchisor franchising around the world. You have assets that you can then execute a judgment against. You go to Guatemala, and what do you have? You have a questionable court without the assets to execute against. So this is a difficult situation.
Will the Guatemala courts issue commissions to allow compulsory depositions in that jurisdiction if the case was pending here?
They're part of the Inter-American Convention on taking evidence abroad, but the fact of the matter is there is no overwhelming problem for the defendants. They have the documents. They have the witnesses. They are their employees. They're in their control. They go around the world all the time. They don't need the process. Well, Lisa will have the process. If the test is overwhelming hardship for the defendants, that's not in their favor. They are in control of the documents and the witnesses. They don't need this process. So that factor falls away.
Bermuda action, you know, in support of your position,
yes.
And you cited for some collateral issues that relate to credibility and things like that.
Yes.
To the extent you have a judgment in Bermuda and you got relief, would it overlap with the relief that you would get in Delaware? Tell me the interrelationship between what you've accomplished in Bermuda,
right,
and what you would seek to accomplish additionally in Delaware.
We alleged in Bermuda the broader conspiracy, but the case actually involved an insurance company where they were issuing false policies to launder money out of Guatemala, and the judgment was related only to that. So it only relates to that piece of the conspiracy. Now, the judge did allow evidence and did make comment on the broader conspiracy.
But it was a different cause of action than in the Delaware case.
What's that? I didn't hear you, Your Honor.
It was a different cause of action.
It was fraud. It just related to one piece of the conspiracy related to this insurance company in Bermuda.
Was it a different cause of action than what's
conspiracy
being asserted
to defraud
in Delaware?
I believe it was conspiracy to defraud also.
Answer is yes.
It's the same cause of action.
Same cause of action.
Different parties.
So
you're splitting
the cause of action between Delaware and Bermuda, and you proceeded on one portion of that in Bermuda. Is that what you're telling us?
There are different parties in Bermuda. There are different defendants in Bermuda. There are different defendants in Florida. None of the defendants here are defendants in the other cases, with the exception of Juan Jose Gutierrez. He's a defendant in one or two of the Florida actions. But the corporations here are not defendants in any other action. In that sense, how would we get jurisdiction in Bermuda over the Delaware companies that did nothing there, the Barbados and the Panama companies that did nothing there? It was only against the companies over which they could get jurisdiction in Bermuda.
Is there anything that would preclude your client from proceeding in Bermuda on the cause of action that's embraced in the Delaware complaint?
Yes, jurisdiction over the companies. They took no action in Bermuda. And the idea we have here, the conspiracy theory of jurisdiction, but that doesn't exist in other places. And to my knowledge, it doesn't. I don't know whether it was considered in Bermuda or not, but in terms of actually taking acts in
the lawsuit here is to obtain a judgment, not to execute on a judgment that was obtained elsewhere. Is that right?
That's correct. If you go through the cryo-made factors, I've already talked about the one, which is ease of proof, which is probably the hardest one. It falls away. They're in control of all the evidence, or most of the evidence, so that's really not an issue. Viewing the premises is really not an issue. Delaware law really is, it's not clear which law is going to apply in this situation, but it's not going to apply anymore in Delaware or Guatemala or wherever. It's going to be an issue of what law applies, but it's going to be equally an issue in almost every jurisdiction. Dependency of similar actions we've talked about, and the absence of personal jurisdiction is an issue, although they say they would submit to jurisdiction. I don't know whether the court would accept jurisdiction based upon this recent decision on competence. The availability of compulsory action. So I don't see that a company that is a worldwide company that does business all over the world has an overwhelming hardship litigating in Delaware, and I'd ask you to reverse that. I want to move on to personal jurisdiction because I thought in particular our brief was inadequate in that. We talked mostly about the tort exception, and I think the transacting business is actually our better argument in that regard. It was made below and rejected below on the grounds, Vice Chancellor Lamb said, that we hadn't shown in, with specificity that this was a corporate reorganization. Well, there's nothing in the factual record to suggest it was a corporate reorganization. The two affidavits by Mr. Gutierrez and Mr. Alvaro Morales, who's the secretary of a number of these companies, Mr. Gutierrez is the president, doesn't say it was a corporate reorganization. As a matter of fact, Mr. Morales acknowledges that the Pollo Campero trademark, which we're saying was taken and given to the Delaware companies, is in the hands of the Barbados company. But he makes no effort to say it's a corporate reorganization or that there was consideration or anything of the like. And so we have alleged very specifically that there was a conspiracy that's supported by the Bermuda action. We've very specifically said that the creation of the Delaware companies was for the purpose of having a vehicle into which the conspirators, as we call them, could put these assets that belonged in Pollo Campero, thereby making the Florida actions irrelevant. That has never been contested other than a general statement that they didn't commit fraud by Mr. Gutierrez, which has now been proven to be not true by the Bermuda action. And therefore, the act of creating the corporation was an act in furtherance of this conspiracy. Mr. Gutierrez, as president of the company, certainly knew or had reason to know that they were taking action in Delaware, as did all of the other foreign companies that were just holding companies for the Delaware companies, that they were taking action in Delaware and availing themselves of the jurisdiction for the purpose of advancing this conspiracy. We have, as I said, the grounds that Vice Chancellor Lamb relied upon that, well, this could just be a corporate reorganization, ignores the fact that we've already proven a conspiracy and the fact that the affidavits of Mr. Gutierrez and Mr. Morales do not say it was a corporate reorganization, don't explain it at all. That was just lawyers' argument that he picked up on. And so we have quite specifically, by proving a conspiracy and showing and specifically alleging acts of creating a corporation, maintaining a corporation in Delaware, that advances the conspiracy, and point, Your Honors, to the Papendeck case, 410 A. 2nd 128, which was this court's case, and Vici versus Phillips Electronics, which is factually similar, 2009 Westlaw 4245724, which is a Chancery Court opinion last year. Now, in that case, as to the corporate officer, they said there was no reason to believe and nothing in the record to say that he knew actions were being taken in Delaware. It was Phillips Electronics, a big company. But here, you're talking about the president of each of these companies who knew or had reason to know that this was happening. And he is found to have been one of the controllers in Bermuda as opposed to conspirators. So we believe there's transacting business jurisdiction in this court. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. Good morning. LISA seeks to litigate in Delaware claims relating to the sale or sales of shares of foreign corporations among foreign parties that occurred in a foreign jurisdiction in 1992, 14 years before LISA filed its complaint in the Court of Chancery. In the intervening years, LISA filed the three separate actions in the Florida state and federal courts based on the same underlying actions, as well as the New York action and the Caribbean action that Mr. Simrat mentioned.
I assume,
and
based on your on the 14-year comment, was latches raised as a defense?
Latches and statute of limitations were raised, Justice Ridgely, and they were presented to the Vice Chancellor. The Vice Chancellor didn't address those in his opinion, but we submit that they are a ground that this Court could affirm on as well. To your to Justice Jacobs' question about whether or not there is evidence in the record regarding the actions in Guatemala, in the affidavit that was submitted by Annette Escobar, who's in the courtroom today, in the Court of Chancery below, and it's in the appendix, page B145, it states that during the pendency of the Florida action, this is in paragraph 35, Lisa and related entities filed hundreds of actions in Guatemala against a group of Guatemalan companies known as the Avicolas, which Lisa is still a stockholder of, and that are the subject of the 1999 Florida state action and related Florida actions. So there is evidence in the record that there's more than 100 actions, some of which are still pending, most of which have been dismissed in Guatemala, but filed by Lisa.
Now, have they been dismissed because the court in Guatemala found that it was not competent, in other words, did not have subject matter jurisdiction?
No, Your Honor. They were largely dismissed on for failure to state a claim, as I understand it. The only connection,
well,
Lisa.
I just want to follow up on the comment made by the other side that this matter may be going back to Florida. Is that?
Your Honor, that is news to our side of the courtroom. But I will say this. The action that was filed in Guatemala was filed by the defendants to force Lisa to do what the Florida courts in the state and the federal court told Lisa to do, to bring the action in Guatemala, because the Florida courts dismissed two of those Florida actions in favor of Guatemala on forum non-convenience grounds. Lisa, to date, has refused to file that action, so the defendants filed then a declaratory action in Guatemala, essentially trying to get Lisa to do what the Florida courts told them they had to do. So we know nothing about this claim now that case may be coming back to Guatemala, but we do know, Justice Ridgely, that Lisa has yet to file the action that the state court in Florida and the federal court in Florida directed it to file. Now, Lisa, the only connection Lisa claims between the Delaware defendants and these alleged foreign conspiracies stems from the incorporation of those two Delaware entities. But they were formed a decade after the claims that give rise to Lisa's complaint. And Lisa's whole argument is that those Delaware corporations were formed to receive assets of the Compera Group that were being sent out of the Compera Group so as to make it more difficult for Lisa to recover if it was successful in Florida. But Lisa's Florida actions have all been dismissed, and those dismissals have all been affirmed. So there isn't any claim here now for potential liability against those Delaware defendants. In fact, the Vice Chancellor concluded that
you're saying they're dismissed in Florida on the merits?
In the 1998 action, Your Honor, which involved the 1992 sale, as Mr. Simrat said, that action was dismissed for failure to state a claim, and that was affirmed on appeal. The 1999 and the federal court actions, both of which were dismissed on forum non-conveniens and affirmed, that involved the so-called greater conspiracy, the allegation that there were inappropriate dividends, insufficient dividends being submitted, issued by the 19 Avicola companies that Lisa is still a stockholder in. Those cases are gone. But those cases don't give rise to the claim in this case. What Lisa alleges in its amended complaint is that the Delaware companies were created so as to make sure that if there was a judgment in the 1998 action involving the 92 sale, they could go after the Delaware entities to collect on that judgment. That's the case that was dismissed for failure to state a claim.
Right. So you're saying there's no connection now, no legal connection between the theory of the Delaware action and the facts that make that theory viable, that namely the possibility of a judgment being issued out of the Florida court.
That is correct, Your Honor, and we made that argument. We made the argument, a res judicata and mootness argument, also to the Vice Chancellor, and again, those issues were not addressed, except I think to the extent in a footnote, but the Vice Chancellor didn't rule on those grounds. He ruled on forum non-conveniens. But our argument is that the claim that Lisa brings here, or is attempting to to pursue against the Delaware defendants is both moot and barred by res judicata principles.
Yeah, raise a different question, Mr. Dent. In your brief, it's argued in various parts that the Delaware case is not the first filed, it's the last filed, you know, after a plethora of cases that were filed in other jurisdictions.
Yes.
Is the point of that argument simply to distinguish the Candlewood case, or is it also to make a separate argument, which is that because the Delaware case is the last case filed, the overwhelming hardship criterion doesn't apply?
It's a fair question, Your Honor, and I think the answer is probably yes to both. The case is very distinguishable.
Probably yes to both?
Yes to both. The case is very distinguishable from Candlewood because this is not the first filed case. Candlewood involved a Delaware plaintiff and a Delaware defendant.
I understand that argument.
And well, the answer to the second point is yes, Your Honor. We remember in this case, the Vice Chancellor first stayed this case under McWane. And as the Court knows, under McWane, as a general rule, litigation should be, or the Court should exercise discretion to make sure that litigation is confined to the jurisdiction in which it was first commenced. So the Vice Chancellor properly applied the McWane factors and stayed the case in favor of the Florida actions. Now, once the Florida actions were over, the Vice Chancellor then addressed the form non-conveniens issue. I submit that this Court could conclude and properly conclude that where you have a plaintiff who's bringing suit in Delaware in a later form, not the first filed form, this Court could conclude that the burden on defendants is not as great. Justice Jacobs, I happened to be reading a decision last night from when Your Honor was on the Chancery Court bench, the Hearst versus General Dynamics case, and I saw that Your Honor raised that issue but didn't decide it. But I think it is an issue that this Court could address. This Court could conclude that where you had other litigation and the court in the trial court stayed it in favor of that litigation, if it comes back to Delaware and there's a form non-conveniens argument, the burden should not be as great on the defendants. But I don't think the Court needs to go that far, because in this case I submit that the Vice Chancellor properly considered all of the prior made factors and concluded that even applying the heavy burden that this Court places in first filed form non-conveniens cases, the defendants met that standard. And I don't want to belabor those factors, but just a couple points, if I may. One difference from Candlewood, Your Honor, is not only do we have affidavits from the Delaware entities demonstrating that all the people involved in these allegations in Guatemala that form Lisa's complaint aren't involved, they have nothing to do with the Delaware defendants, and the Delaware defendants don't control them. But in addition to that, we have the affidavits that were submitted in connection with the Florida actions. Let me step back. Lisa has alleged in his complaint, beginning at paragraph 14, they name 10 parties that are, they call other relevant parties. There are five Salvadorian corporations, there's a Guatemalan corporation, so I believe there's a Panamanian corporation, and they're all named as other relevant parties, but they're not sued here. Well, they were sued in Florida, and we submitted affidavits in Florida from representatives from virtually every one of those so-called other relevant persons. Those affidavits are in the record. They're all attached to the affidavit of Annette Escobar. They're in the appendix, and they show that all the third parties that Lisa says are relevant have no connection to Delaware and don't have any way of controlling and bringing those people to Delaware.
But wasn't that also the case in Candlewood? That is, apart from the fact that in Candlewood the Delaware action was filed first rather than last, aren't the facts essentially the same?
No, Your Honor, because in Candlewood you didn't have affidavits from third parties. You had an affidavit from the defendants. These are affidavits from people who Lisa itself says are relevant to this case. They're not sued here because they can't get jurisdiction, and the court in Florida has already dismissed the claims against them. But Lisa says they're relevant. Those third parties have said, all of our representatives are in Guatemala. We're not subject to jurisdiction. It would be a huge imposition for these third parties who Lisa says they need in this case
to
be here.
But isn't what's important, you know, the facts that are in the affidavits, not who filed them?
The fact, yes, Your Honor, but it goes broader than Candlewood because These are affidavits from people that who aren't even defendants, but Lisa says are relevant. And those people say they're not subject to, and all of their witnesses can't be compelled, and they wouldn't be coming to the United States.
Well, how does that create overwhelming hardship for your clients?
Fair question, Your Honor. Remember, we're talking about the two Delaware entities that were created a decade after the allegations. The people who Lisa alleges were involved in the so-called frauds aren't under the control of the defendant corporation. So essentially, this is the way we've talked about it, Your Honor, is this is the hair on the tail of the tip of the tail of the dog. We're talking about two Delaware corporations created a decade after the wrongdoing, and the significant overwhelming hardship is those defendants don't control the people who have knowledge about Lisa's claims, so they can't defend themselves. Plus, most of the defendants who were in the case in Florida that Lisa went after when they were originally trying to prove this case have been dismissed. So we can't get them to come here. So the two Delaware defendants can't defend against the underlying claims that Lisa's claiming. Now, here's how Lisa gets around that. It's sort of a sleight of hand. What Lisa says that there's this Bermuda case, and because of the Bermuda case, they no longer really have to prove the liability here, but that you can somehow rely on the Bermuda case. Vice Chancellor Lamb correctly rejected that argument and found that the Bermuda case has no impact on the Delaware case. There were two defendants initially in the Bermuda case, neither of which is a defendant here. One of them, the Avicola Villalobos, which is one of the 19 Avicola companies that Lisa still owns a share of, was dismissed. So the only defendant in that case was the Leamington Insurance Company, which is a captive Bermuda reinsurance company. And at issue were only premiums issued for transportation policies. The Bermuda court concluded that the payment of premiums for those transportation policies was not justified by the level of risk. There were other policies that the court upheld, but just as to these transportation policies. And that had those premiums been paid, Lisa would have basically collected its one-third share of what was paid to Leamington. So Lisa got a judgment for $1.9 million. That judgment was satisfied. Now, Lisa wants the court to believe that the Bermuda court somehow has established the existence of the frauds in the amended complaint, the overall conspiracy. The Bermuda court found directly to the contrary, Your Honor, and the Bermuda decision is in the record at Appendix A-139. In paragraph 62, the Bermuda court says, and I quote, "I am not satisfied, having regard to all of the evidence in any event, that Lisa was defrauded as alleged in relation to the Pollos Vivos and Los Cedros frauds." Now, the Pollos Vivos and Los Cedros frauds were the so-called conspiracy that gave rise to the 1999 state court action and the federal court action. There was not one word in the Bermuda decision about the 1992 sale, which forms the basis of Lisa's claim in the Delaware action. Now, Lisa also argues that the Bermuda court made some
findings. Your point, I gather, is not, as the other side argues, that the claim in the Bermuda action was a piece of a larger conspiracy. It was a completely different conspiracy, unrelated to what is being alleged here.
Absolutely, Your Honor. In fact, the allegation involved the Avicolas, one company involved in the Avicolas and the payment of insurance. The issue here is the Campero Group. They're totally different companies. The important thing to remember is Lisa and the family owned Campero companies and Avicola companies. In the 1992 sale, Lisa was bought out of the Campero companies. They remain in the Avicolas. And the Avicolas, and only the Avicolas, were involved at all in the transportation policies in the Bermuda case. So the Bermuda case can have no bearing on the Delaware case because the Delaware case involved the Campero side. And on that point, Your Honor, Lisa argues that there was some finding with regard to Defendant Juan Jose Gutierrez. That's also false. Juan Jose's, quote, connection with Bermuda was entirely manufactured by Lisa there. Lisa referred to him as one of several, quote, unquote, controllers. They used that term in their complaint in Bermuda. And then in its decision, the Bermuda court used the term controller. But Juan Jose was not a defendant in Bermuda. He did not testify in Bermuda. He was not an officer or a director of Leamington. He never had anything to do with Leamington. He is an officer and a director of companies in the Campero Group. But again, the Campero Group did not participate in the transportation policies and was not a defendant in the Bermuda action. So even though the Bermuda court used that term controller and Lisa, you defined Juan Jose as a controller, the court never made any findings with regard to Juan Jose and definitely, certainly never, in fact, found that Juan Jose did anything to harm Lisa. So the contention that there's anything in the Bermuda case that has anything to do with the Delaware case is just wrong. The last thing I do want to mention on the crime aid factors is Lisa argues the fact that there's now not a pending action in Guatemala that they've brought or in Florida somehow works to their advantage. But again, the Florida courts in the 99 action and the federal court dismissed the case and said and directed them to file in Guatemala. And I submit that Lisa's argument that the absence of a pending case elsewhere somehow serves their purposes is like the old story about the child who murders his parents and then seeks mercy from the court as an orphan. The absence of any pending action elsewhere now outside of Delaware by Lisa is entirely of their own doing. Let me just touch real briefly on jurisdictional discovery. The court doesn't need to get there if the court affirms on forum non. But as a threshold matter, Lisa did not even request jurisdictional discovery till it filed its answering brief. So this argument that it somehow needed discovery is made up. They filed their answering brief, then sought discovery. Vice Chancellor Lamb said, I'm not going to give you that discovery now. I'm going to stay the case. When the case came back, he said, I'm dismissing it. On jurisdictional discovery, Lisa's request for discovery is based on 3104 C1 and 3, which the Vice Chancellor properly concluded would be available only if there was a connection between Delaware and the harm that Lisa alleges. Lisa alleges that there was the tortious injury Lisa alleges has to do with this alleged transfer in 2001 from the Campero Panama to the Delaware entities. But Lisa says in its complaint, paragraph 53 of its complaint, Lisa says that the Campero Panama was formally unrelated to the Campero Group. So when the transfer, if there was a transfer made to Campero Panama in 2001, that caused Lisa's harm, not a subsequent creation of a Delaware entity and a further transfer of those assets. Because in 2001, the asset, Lisa's own allegation is that the asset was transferred out of the Campero Group to a formally unrelated company. Mm-hmm. And so, as the Vice Chancellor concluded, anything that happened after that would have been irrelevant to the harm.
So to try to express it in broader terms, tell me if I have it right or I don't. The Vice Chancellor held that there is no basis to seek discovery to support a theory that is not legally viable.
That's correct,
and what you've been telling us is why the theory of jurisdiction is not viable.
That, absolutely, Your Honor. The only other point I wanted to make in my last 30 seconds is that I submit that this court may, in the interest of justice, decide any issue on appeal that was presented fairly to the Vice Chancellor. We argued the claims are moot in light of the 1998 action. We argued that the 1998 action renders those claims res judicata, or it precludes them because of res judicata. And then also, Justice Ridgely, we also made the point about them not being timely. They were barred by the statute, barred under latches, and there's no saving statute here involved. And so in any event, those claims cannot be presented in Delaware. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Your Honor, I think it's very important to understand that in these actions there aren't overlapping defendants. These defendant groups, this group of family group, creates hundreds of companies. They have assets, and they keep hiding the assets. And when they can get at an asset like in Bermuda, Lisa sued them. When they get at an asset in Delaware, Lisa sued them. So it's not that they are suing the same people. There's the same controlling group, family controlling group, but they create all these companies and hide the assets. And that is Lisa's problem, to go to different courts where there are assets that are visible that they can get. And that affects a lot of what's happening here. Now, in terms of this mootness argument, they say that the Florida court found that there was a failure to state claim on the sale of the Comparo Group because there's a unique Florida rule, unique as far as I know, that you don't just tender the money back, you actually have to pay the money back. Lisa was not willing to pay $14 million to these people who dissipated and disappear all around the world. So there was a failure to state a claim. Now, that does not end the case, because what happens is they're moving assets around, and as a corporation accepts these assets, they are joining the conspiracy. Now, these Delaware companies joined the conspiracy after the fact, before the Florida case was dismissed. The Florida case is dismissed. It doesn't mean that they didn't join the conspiracy to hide these assets and to continue the fraud that occurred with the sale. So, yes, the Florida action was dismissed because Lisa wasn't willing to turn over $14 million to the other side, but these people had already joined the conspiracy. You could say, well, they could have acted lawfully. They didn't have to move the assets around, but they did. And when they did, the corporations joined the conspiracy and are liable for the fraud, the underlying damage that occurred. Not the rescission action was dismissed, but the actual fraud itself is still there. And in terms of one last point about this collateral estoppel, res judicata, it's all different companies. If we came here with the Bermuda company, they would knock it down. If they came here with the Florida company, we would say it's different companies. We never suggested we could bring the Bermuda claim here and say, okay, the fraud is proven. There are witnesses who you're not going to be able to get in Guatemala.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Your Honor, I have a question. I didn't.
Okay. No.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you both for your arguments. The court will take this matter under advisement and will also take a brief recess.